Well, let me welcome you to this review of Mark 5 to 8. I'm really glad that you could be with us this evening, and I'm excited for what God's going to say to us as we look at this section together. Mark 5 to 8 begins with Jesus' disciples out at sea in a boat. All of a sudden, a great windstorm arises. The waves are crashing against one another, and water is already beginning to pour into the boat. The disciples are terrified. They're sure they're going to drown. But Jesus is asleep, lying on a cushion in the stern. In their panic, the disciples wake him and ask the first of three questions in the story. "Teacher," they say, "don't you care that we're perishing?" But Jesus isn't concerned. He simply gets up, rebukes the wind and the sea, and a great calm descends on the water. Then he turns to them and asks the second question. "Why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith?" And finally, the disciples turn to one another and ask themselves in wonder and amazement, "Who then is this that even the wind and see, obey him?" The three questions in this story set up the three main themes in Mark 5 to 8. Rescue: don't you care that we're perishing? Rejection: have you still no faith? And recognition: who then is this? The common thread running through these themes is the Exodus. In the Exodus, God rescued his people Israel from slavery and death in Egypt. He provided for them on their journey through the wilderness. He fed them with manna from heaven, and he gave them water from a rock to drink. And he brought them safely through the wilderness to the promised land. Later on in the Bible, the prophets and Psalms used the imagery of the Exodus to describe a far greater rescue that God would one day perform through the Messiah. It would be a new and better Exodus. God would rescue his people from death itself. He would satisfy the hungry with good things, and he would reveal his glory for all to see. This promise of a future rescue forms the dramatic backdrop behind Mark 5 to 8. It's not just about rescue, but a new Exodus rescue. Not just about rejection, but the same rejection as in the Exodus. And not just about recognition, but recognition of the Exodus God. In the rest of our time together, then, we're going to consider these three themes. First, Jesus' new Exodus rescue. Secondly, Israel's familiar Exodus rejection. And thirdly, Peter's miraculous Exodus recognition. In between each of these headings, we'll also break into our groups for discussion. And at the end of the evening, we'll spend some time praying in light of what we've heard. So firstly, Jesus' new Exodus rescue. After the storm at sea and his disciples' desperate fear, Jesus encounters a whole series of similarly helpless people. He's confronted by a man with a legion of demons. He's sought out by a woman with a discharge of blood. He's begged by Jairus, a local synagogue leader, with a dying daughter. In some ways, these people couldn't have been more different. Jairus was a respected member of the local community and an important leader in its religious life. But the woman was an outcast, considered unclean under the law and cut off from both man and God. The demon-possessed man was so repulsive to society, he had to be banished to the mountains to live with the pigs in Gentile country. But by placing these people together, Mark intends to draw a parallel between them. In particular, he highlights two things they have in common. First, they were all perishing under the shadow of death. They were all perishing under the shadow of death. When the disciples saw the waves breaking into their boat, they knew that their lives were in mortal danger. "Teacher, don't you care that we're perishing?" they said. At the beginning of the next chapter, we're told three times that the demon-possessed man was living amongst the tombs, literally surrounded by the grim spectre of the grave. The woman with bleeding was enduring a sort of living death as the lifeblood slowly drained from her body. And Jairus' daughter was first at the point of death and then actually died, the mourning having already started before Jesus arrived. While they were a disparate group with a diverse range of difficulties, they all shared the same essential problem. They were all perishing under the shadow of death. Secondly, as a consequence, they were all beyond human help. When they saw the wind and waves, the disciples knew that no man could save them. They were sure they were going to die. We're told twice in chapter 5 that the demon-possessed man couldn't be bound or subdued by anyone. The woman had suffered for 12 long years, having spent everything she had on the best doctors money could buy, only to get worse and worse. Jairus' servants certainly knew that no one could help him once his daughter was dead. "Why trouble the teacher anymore?" they said. "No one can help her now. Like everyone else, she was beyond human help because of the shadow of death." In some ways, it gives us a picture of the fall, an illustration of everything that mars our experience of this world, just like we saw in Mark 1 and 2. But it's more intense here than it was there. Now we see not just humanity, but nature itself in turmoil. We see a man possessed not just by one demon, but by a whole legion of demons, powerful enough to kill 2,000 pigs in an instant. We see not just uncleanness, but uncleanness which has persisted for over a decade. And we see not just sickness and disease, but death itself. It's not just another picture of the fall, but a picture of humanity's utter helplessness in the face of the grave. A picture of people living under the shadow of death, where no man can save them. It's a picture Mark's readers would certainly have recognized. The average first century town would have been filled with exactly the same kind of hopelessness, with urban disorder, social dislocation, filth, disease, misery, fear, and cultural chaos. To that list, Christians could add persecution, false accusation, mockery, and the fear of imprisonment. They would certainly have recognized the disciples' anguished cry, "Teacher, don't you care that we're perishing?" And perhaps that's a question that you've asked yourself recently too. After all, what else has COVID-19 shown us if not our utter helplessness in the face of the grave? I remember watching the news footage from Wuhan at the start of the pandemic, of people trapped in their homes, shouting to each other from their balconies. A whole city in the most quickly developing country on earth, groaning under the shadow of death. And since then we've watched as a shroud of grief has engulfed our entire world. 250,000 in the US, 41,000 in the UK, over 1 million worldwide. Of course, we have the vaccine now. Fewer people will die of COVID-19 from this point on. But we will all still die of something. There's nothing that we can do to escape the grave forever. Vaccines and medical care can only delay the inevitable. Ultimately, We are helpless in the face of death, powerless to do anything about our own mortality. Like the desperate people in Mark 5, we live under the shadow of death, where no man can save us. But Jesus is no mere man. He can save us. With every one of these helpless people, he proves his power to do a rescue from death for the desperate. A rescue from death for the desperate. He calms the storm with a word. He casts out legion with a command. A mere touch of his robe achieves in a moment what 12 years of medical treatment failed to. He can even raise a dead girl to life. Little girl, it's time to wake up. With every one of these mighty works, he proves his power to save the desperate from death. But he is not just able to save, he is willing to save as well. Don't you care? His disciples had asked. And the answer in Mark 5 is yes, of course he cares. He is both willing and able to save us from perishing. He has come to do a rescue from death for the desperate. But not just any rescue from death. A new Exodus rescue from death. As well as providing a picture of our own mortality, these perishing people in Mark 5 should remind us of Psalm 107. One of the most important New Exodus passages in the Bible. It comes at the beginning of the final and climactic book of the Psalter, and it describes God's New Exodus work towards four groups of desperate people. People who bear a striking resemblance to the characters in Mark 5. And let me read from Psalm 107, verse 10. You might like to turn there in your own Bible. And see if you recognize the people being described. Psalm 107, verse 10. Some sat in darkness and in the shadow of death, prisoners in affliction and in irons, for they had rebelled against the words of God and spurned the counsel of the Most High. So he bowed their hearts down with hard labor. They fell down with none to help them. Did you recognize the people being described? It should remind you of the demon-possessed man. Remember how he lived among the tombs and had often been bound with shackles and chains. He too was a prisoner in affliction and in irons, wasn't he? Living in darkness and the shadow of death without hope of escape. Or let me give another example from verse 23, Psalm 107, verse 23. Some went down to the sea in ships, doing business on the great waters. They saw the deeds of the Lord, his wondrous works in the deep. For he commanded and raised the stormy wind, which lifted up the waves of the sea. They mounted up to heaven. They went down to the depths. Their courage melted away in their evil plight. They reeled and staggered like drunken men and were at their wits' end. It sounds remarkably like the disciples, doesn't it? Crying out to Jesus in the storm, Lord, don't you care that we're perishing? These desperate people in Mark 5, then, aren't just random. They're meant to remind us of Psalm 107, of humanity sitting in darkness and the shadow of death, utterly beyond human help, and able only to cry out to the Lord to save them from their trouble. And when Jesus does save them, he isn't just doing a few powerful miracles, but revealing his identity as the Lord God himself, doing his new Exodus work. In Psalm 107, verse 13, we're told that the people cried out to the Lord in their trouble, and he delivered them from their distress. He brought them out of darkness and the shadow of death and burst their bonds apart. Or again in verse 29, then the Lord made the storm be still, and the waves of the sea were hushed. The work of calling people out of darkness and the shadow of death, the work of bursting bonds apart and setting prisoners free, the work of commanding the wind and waves and making the storms be still, is the new Exodus work of the Lord. When Jesus casts out a demon that no one can subdue, when he says to the woman, daughter, your faith has saved you. When he brings a dead girl back to life, he is doing the new Exodus work of the Lord. He is binding the strong man and plundering his house. He is gathering people from east and west. He is calling the desperate out of darkness and the shadow of death. He is doing a new Exodus rescue. And therefore, he is doing a rescue that only God himself could do. A rescue only God himself could do. In Psalm 107, it's the Lord whom people call to when no one else can save them. It's the Lord who hears their cries and rescues them from their distress. It's the Lord who bursts their bonds apart and brings them out from death itself. And it's the Lord who calms the wind and waves and makes the storms be still. When Jesus saves the desperate from death, when he casts out legion with a mere command, when he stills the raging sea with a single sentence, he is revealing his identity as the Exodus God, the one whom people call to when no one else can save them, the one who alone commands the wind and sea, the one who leads us out of darkness and the shadow of death. When the disciples ask themselves in wonder and amazement, who then is this that even the wind and sea obey him? The answer is the Lord, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God of Exodus and Moses, the God of Psalm 107. It is the Exodus God doing a new Exodus rescue. The right response to his rescue then isn't the terrified fear of the disciples, but faith. Why are you so afraid, he said. Have you still no faith? He said to the woman later on, daughter, your faith has saved you. And he told Jairus, don't fear, only believe. The question isn't, don't you care, Jesus, but do you believe, disciple? He is the Lord God himself, doing the new Exodus work he promised. Of course he cares that we're perishing. The question is, do you believe in him? Because if you do, you have no need to fear the grave. Faith casts out the fear of death. Faith casts out the fear of death. When the disciples saw the waves crashing into their boat, they were terrified. They were sure they were going to drown. But if they'd known who was really with them, they wouldn't have feared at all. It wasn't just their teacher sleeping there on a cushion in the stern, but the Lord God himself with power to command the wind and waves, with power to save them from death. If they'd had faith to see who he truly was, they wouldn't have feared at all. When Jairus heard that his daughter had died, imagine the fear that must have gripped his heart, the sinking feeling when he realized that no one could save her now. But if he'd known who he had really asked to help him, then he would have had nothing to fear. Not just some miracle worker who happened to do some mighty deeds, but the Lord God himself, with power to raise the dead and give them life. The one who calls the prisoners from their tombs in a new exodus. If he'd had faith to see who Jesus truly was, he needn't have feared at all. And so for us, when we feel the shadow of death in this fallen world, when we lose cherished family and friends, when we face death ourselves in the future, we have nothing to fear. While the world cowers before COVID-19, desperately trying to find a solution, locking themselves away till they do, we can have confidence that when we cry out to the Lord God Almighty, he will deliver us from the shadow of death. We haven't just followed some other expert with nothing to offer but graphs and slogans, but the Lord God himself, with power to break the cords of death and ransom our souls from the grave. The Exodus God, who saves us from death in a new Exodus rescue. Faith casts out the fear of death. But secondly, faith leaves us in awe of Jesus. Faith leaves us in awe of Jesus. The disciples had feared for their lives in the storm. They thought they were going to perish, but they didn't stop being afraid once the storm was over. Rather, filled with even greater fear, they said to one another, "Who then is this, that even the wind and sea obey him?" Yes, faith casts out the fear of death, but it also leaves us in awe of Jesus, at the magnitude of his identity and the immensity of his work. No wonder the woman came before him, not just with faith, but with fear and trembling. Because when we see the new Exodus God doing his rescue, it doesn't just give us hope against death. It also makes us tremble at the weight of his glory and ask ourselves with reverent fear, "Who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him?" Well, let's turn into our groups now and discuss those things.